Ryan, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder. It's Thursday. Welcome to the program. We're thrilled that you're listening.
I believe Elif, who is sitting in for Kevin, our producer, who's away on a bachelor trip.
Wow.
I believe
we'll ever see him again? I don't.
Yeah, I do.
A lot of debauchery going on wherever he is.
Well,
I'm
I
not
think
comfortable
Elif
with it.
Played the AC/DC in honor of your little Angus Young lookalike schoolboy outfit that you're wearing today. So great job with that.
Thank you. I liked it from time to time, have the schoolboy look. And then what happens is bigger boys here in the office take my books and throw them over my head.
I saw Carmen do that too.
Mark Carmen did that to me. That's rude, isn't it?
Yep.
I may have made a horrible mistake, and it doesn't seem like a bad mistake, but I think I have made a mistake.
Uh-oh.
There's a guy downstairs, and you know him because you pass the same guy that I pass every day.
The real friendly dude?
He's incredibly friendly. But do you know his name?
No. Is this... Yesterday, you know, we had our little cleaning woman, Marta, that we talked to all the time, and she left for a different job.
Yeah.
And a guy has taken her place, mm-hmm. and I've seen him for the almost 3 years that I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And just yesterday, I asked what his name was, and I forgot it.
Oh.
Mike?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's Mike.
I don't know that little dude down in the loading dock.
Last week, I said to myself, this is ridiculous. Every day as I walk past, he says, hello, Mr. Leff. And that's weird because that's my dad. That's not me.
Right.
And then it's just a quick wave. He says hello because he's got a machine in front of him that when we put our badges in to get into the building, it's our picture and our name. So he has a slight advantage.
Big time. That, I'm getting one of those machines.
Right. Have that with you at all times. So every morning, and he's such a pleasant guy, he says, hello, Mr. Leff, with a very big smile on his face. And I always just say hello, and then it's over. And then last week I went, this is crazy. Every day for 6 or 8 months I've been doing this. So I said, I feel awful. You know my name, and I don't know your name. And he says, my name's Gibrani. And I said, I don't know anyone else named Gibrani. And he said, well, I'm half Italian and I'm half Mexican, and my parents decided that that's a perfect name for me. So we had a little discussion, and now I know his name, and I know why it's his name. So then the next day, that discussion became a little longer. He brought up some things that were on his mind, and we talked for a little bit.
I know where this is
today
going.
I was down there for about 9 minutes.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. And and that's fine. There's nothing that's what the world is based on, is people saying things to other people. That's all right. And then it always ends with this. Like the first day I said something like, Gibrani, keep us safe. And he had a nice chuckle. And then the next day I'm like, I got to think of something to top Gibrani, keep us safe. So I said, stay in school. And that's ridiculous because he's already out of school. So then like today, I didn't have any words of wisdom at the end, and he left the window open until I had something.
So what'd you say?
I gotta go. I just looked at my watch that I don't have. I looked at my wrist that where there's used to be a watch. I go, oh, look at where the time would be. I gotta go. But now, I mean, really, it's gotten a little longer every day, and that's my own fault because I set that precedent.
See, now I'm envious because I will talk to anyone.
I know.
And he has not, the only thing he asked me is if I'm from here originally. And I said, yeah, I was born in Brookfield.
Yeah.
And I've grown up here my whole life. Why? And he said, you look very country western.
Oh.
And I said, I do.
Oh.
All right. Well,
that's
he
a compliment.
Said, I thought, I think it
is.
It is
a compliment.
He didn't say it, you're not from around here, are you? That's not how he said it, right?
No.
He was chewing a weed. You're not from these parts, are you?
But I kind of I just chuckled and said, oh, yeah, no, I'm from here, but thank you, I think.
Right.
But I've never asked his name, but now I want to, I'll take him over for you.
You're going to start leaving home early because the first day was about 45 seconds, maybe a minute, then it was a minute and a half, and today I was down there for about 8 or 9 minutes. And, you know, things are crazy in Fallujah, aren't they, Mr. Leff? And I go, yeah, are you kidding me? In Fallujah, things are crazy. So then we talked about that for a little bit.
This is an opportunity for show prep, Bill.
I know.
You could start bouncing some topics off of him, and then
I know
you could have it locked down before you even get in.
The president of this company, Jimmy DeCastro, was down there one morning, and I was walking in with Jimmy DeCastro. We had our lunch break at noon, and Jimmy was still down there.
Was he?
It wasn't that
long.
But he did say, oh, that guy's so nice.
He
just asked me about what stocks to buy. I'm
is
like,
that
why
right?
is he asking you that?
Well,
I mean, it's just
he'll be retired soon. He'll have taken Jimmy's stock advice and go through the roof with it. Good for him.
Well, now I'm feeling really hurt because he never talks to me.
You have to kind of, it's one of those jobs where you almost have to initiate it, because I'm sure they're told, don't, but the people who work in the building are very busy people, except for Bill left. So just whatever, when they come by, say hello to them.
I think you got to start offering him stock tips now.
Do that. Do
just,
that.
Just go up and say, this one's a winner.
I'm hearing things about Alcoa. Just say that. Just walk past.
I'm hurt he's not talking to me.
He'll
I
talk
just get
to you.
Quick little things. I'd be down there for an hour.
Well,
I'd
he
talk
thinks
to
you're
him.
From the country, so.
Right. No, I cleared that right. up.
Right. He'll say all country things to you. I hear there's a twister coming.
Ask you when the next Rascal Flatts album is coming out.
It was just a very weird thing because I came up here and told you that. He just asked me if I,
right.
you know, I have a country western. I think he just said a country look to you.
Oh, well, that don't take that the wrong way. That's not a bad thing, right?
I don't know. My hair looks like straw. I don't know.
That's what it is. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah. So are you going to talk to him anymore?
We've opened the floodgates? Yeah, because now if I don't
say hi. Now?
No, it's just if I don't say anything now, it's like, wow, what happened to Mr. Uppity? All of a sudden, too good to talk to me.
I have a way to get you out of it.
What? Come in a different entrance? I thought about that.
Just put like earbuds in.
Oh, no, nah, he'd see through that.
No.
What are you listening to? Did Wendy give you some of her country music? Is it Tammy Wynette? Yeah, it's Tammy Wynette. All right, a quick break. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Now, when I hear a song like this, I just naturally think of you, because you have a you seem like you're a country.
What did you just call me?
You seem like you're from the country to me. When I hear a song like this, I say to myself, there's Wendy. That's Wendy's music right there.
Who is this?
The Bellamy Brothers.
Is it the Bellamy Brothers?
Yes.
Somebody, yes, Jabrani, and he is a little guy. I shouldn't say that. Is that offensive when I say it to about a guy? Because he's kind of little.
Well, where do you classify little?
Well, I only see him through a little window, so to me, he looks like he doesn't look like he's a 6-footer.
He's not a munchkin.
No.
No.
But he's young and
right.
He's little.
Right. All right.
Little Jabrani.
Say that to him and see what happens.
I will.
Hi, little fella.
He looks and then just, little like, to me.
Rub his head.
No. He's adorable.
All right.
But he said, you know, are you look like you're from you look like a country girl.
Oh.
And I couldn't figure out
why.
Did
you have a punk in your mouth at the time?
No.
Like smoking a punk?
I did not have a red bandana on me. I wasn't wearing a cowboy hat.
Were you chewing tobacco?
Yes.
Okay, that might be why.
You could have thought I was a baseball player.
Oh, big spittoon true. Was a giveaway.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. What you looking at on the learning box, Jabrani? Did you say that to him?
No, I can't even talk like that. But somebody has solved the problem.
What is it?
219 says, no offense, but it's your hair and makeup that make you look like you're from the country.
Are you offended by that?
No. I mean, I like big hair. I've had it bigger.
You like big hair and you cannot lie.
I'm telling you, I am ready to move to Nashville and live next door to Spike. I love it there.
Every time you come back from there, you say that. What is it about that part of the country that just appeals to you? Is there something?
The town folk.
Is that what it is?
I just love it. It's a great city. It's like Chicago, but smaller, so you can get around easier. There's fun things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Music crazy, so mm-hmm. you can always go somewhere to see music.
I heard, though, not as affordable as some people think.
Is that true?
It is pretty expensive there to live.
Well, that I don't know. I just know, like, prices of things, a lot of barbecue, that's good, and
that would be good.
It's way cheaper.
But you say there's a lot of music all over. Is it primarily country music, isn't it?
Slash was playing at this place called The Exit right down from our hotel in the west end of Nashville. We found out later, of course, but I mean, Jack White has a record store there.
Yeah.
It's not all country.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that.
And, you know, I'm telling you why I like it so much, and I think this comes into play. We got a tour of the Gibson Guitar Factory.
Yeah.
Not the Gibson store. This is the factory on the outskirts of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And it was...
Was it clear on the other side of town?
It was. I don't even know the jargon, but yes, it was definitely...
Here's what you need to know jargon-wise.
All right, tell me.
This will get you through the next time you're in Nashville. Don't do something. You have to be fixing to do something.
Oh, I was fixing to get a tour at the Gibson Factory.
That's what you need to say.
All right,
if
good.
You say that, you're in.
fixin'.
Just say that about everything. Don't do it. Be fixin' to do it.
My wife was a teacher in Memphis, and she the kids would constantly say to her, "Do I put my book up?" She's like, I don't. What?
Where are you putting your book up?
Just to put your book away. The kids would say, "Put your book up."
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Say
right,
that.
I'm writing that. I'm gonna put. Yeah. I'm fixing to put my book up.
Ryan and I can help you. All right. So the Gibson Factory.
And it was so cool to me. Not anyone can get a tour. My husband knows somebody who works at Gibson Guitars, and you go through this entire tour of literally wood that comes in, different types of wood, and then you go through all the various stations. We had to wear safety glasses.
Yeah.
And you can't talk to any of the employees.
Why is that?
Because they're busy and they're working with lathes and saws, so you don't want to distract them.
Right.
But it was so cool to walk through the assembly line and see all the care and hard work that goes into one Gibson guitar.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Sure.
Like 10 million sanding layers. I mean, it's just unreal. So as we're walking around not talking to anyone, all of a sudden this woman who works at the Gibson Guitar Factory walks up to me and she said, Excuse me, I don't want to bother you, but where did you get your shoes? Because we have all been watching
you walk through this plant. Where does someone get some shoes?
They're just the Converse All-Star wedges that I actually bought because Kristen Decker bought them.
Yeah.
And I just was loving it. She goes, "Do you mind if I take a picture of them?" So Jim just looks
at me. You do that. I've seen you do that to people.
Women do that because you love something, you want to get it for your very own self. You're fixing to buy your own shoes.
Yeah.
So, you know, my son Michael's laughing at me, and Jim is looking at me, like just looking at me smile, and he goes, "You're beaming." I said, "This was awesome." He goes, "When did you realize, you know, they've been eyeing you as you've walked through that thing? They've been looking at your shoes, and it took them almost till the end of the tour to come up and say, 'Where did you get those?'" And Jim goes, "Did this make your day?" I said, this made my year.
Yeah, it did. So when you're here, people from here think you're from there, but when you're there, they're amazed at your footwear. How about that? No matter where you go, you're on top. You're good.
Quick phone call from Kevin. We're fixing to talk to Kevin. How's it going?
Well, I was down in Nashville once, and the one thing I noticed that was unbelievable, that in the middle of a city park, they have a life-size replica of the Parthenon from Greece.
They do?
Yes.
That was unbelievable. In Nashville,
Life-size? It's the actual size?
No.
He said life-size.
It's not.
Maybe it's to scale, but it was kind of huge.
That's still pretty cool.
I just saw signs for it. We didn't go see it. I thought it was maybe a venue or something. I didn't know it was just a replica of the Parthenon from Greece. I thought it was a restaurant.
Right. They looked at the ruins and, like, you know, formulated the actual Parthenon as it looked, you know, thousands of years ago.
That's outstanding. That's
I'm fixing to go to the Parthenon when I'm there, y'all.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, we need to take a quick break. The news is next. Ryan has the news, and then we have a huge show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
A long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen.
Animals.
That's how people used to say animals.
But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees.
Now,
some cats and rats and elephants.
You know all the words.
So forlorn.
I'm very proud of you.
All is the unicorn.
You know all the words to this.
I watched Dark in the Park.
Do you know who wrote this song?
No.
Shel Silverstein.
Did he really?
Yeah. He did. The poet and frequent guest at the Playboy Mansion.
Which is weird in itself. Isn't it when you say, you know, writes all these children's books?
And hangs out with Hefner at the mansion and wears a caftan.
His giving tree was much different.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. The reason we played that song is if you grew up here in Chicago, you remember Ark in the Park on Ray Rayner's show, and it puts you in the mind of animals, and I know that you're getting an addition to your family later today.
Two
additions. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Oh. Dylan wanted a tortoise, and he has been obsessed with a tortoise for probably the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And we said, wait till summer, wait till after we get back from Disney and Nashville, you know, because I don't want to get a tortoise watcher.
Right.
I keep slipping and calling it a turtle, and he corrects me every time. So I just wanted to see the difference between a tortoise and a turtle.
I don't know what the difference is.
I didn't really either, but the main thing is a tortoise is mainly a land dweller,
yeah,
and a turtle is mainly a water dweller.
So structurally, they're built kind of the same. It's just that one opts to go to the water and the other stays on land. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and like a turtle's shell is flatter because it swims.
Yeah.
A tortoise has like a big domed
lid retractable?
On it. No.
In case it rains?
And the thing that's weird to me is they live 40 to 50 years.
Wow.
And I said, Dylan, that's a big commitment.
Isn't it, though? Because he may not live with you for 40 or 50 years. He may at some point move out and start a family of his own, and then you still have a tortoise or two.
No, I'll be dead. Are you listening to this? 40 or 50 years.
I'm trying to be optimistic.
It's going to outlive me.
We're rooting for you.
We're all hoping for the best.
And he wanted one, and then...
Can't have just one.
Well, we were going to get one. They're kind of expensive. They're over $100 a Russian
Are
tortoise.
They?
And they
Are
only
they really?
Get to be
But really,
like six
broken out
inches.
Over 50 years.
Right, it's
you
$2
know?
A year.
But there's
that's the biggest bargain in the pet world.
Believe it or not, there's a tortoise rescue like there are with certain breeds of dogs and stuff.
What do they do? I don't understand.
It's like somebody who realizes they don't want to make the 40 to 50 year commitment say, hey, does anybody want a turtle or a tortoise?
Oh.
So a friend of my sister's has two tortoise.
Yeah. I didn't know that that was the plural, but
I don't think that is.
It makes sense.
And so today at 4:30... Dilly
tortoise
dog.
Time. 4:30 yes. Tortoise time.
Dilly Dog is going with Jim to pick up the tortoises, and he's getting two, and he's really in a quandary as to what to name them. He was going to go, he loves Back to the Future, so
yeah.
He was going to go Copernicus and Einstein,
yeah.
Which was the name of the dog that they had.
So solid tortoise names, both of them.
Well, that's what he said. It's going to be too much explaining.
But what if somebody has already named these tortoise, and then all of a sudden it becomes confusing, because for the last 30 years they've been answering to one name, and now all of a sudden there's new names.
Well, first of all, the woman who had these two tortoise only had them a couple of years.
Oh.
So they still got a good 38 to 48 years left in them.
That's fun.
We watched one. You know how the classrooms have a pet?
Yeah, right. Sure.
We watched a tortoise a couple summers ago, and I have to tell you, it just is fun. I know.
What do they do that's
I
fun?
Knew you were going to ask that. They don't really do much.
Right.
But you can take them in the yard. You have to keep an eye on them because they
or
could
else,
escape.
Or
else,
would they escape?
Yeah, they could.
How far could they get?
Well, they're
like in 6 months, you go, he's right across the street. Go get the tortoise.
These little guys aren't that slow.
No, they move, yeah.
I mean, they don't move that quickly, but you have to keep an eye on them because if they get lost in the bushes, then a neighborhood cat can, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we have to wash our hands before and after touching them.
What could you get? Is there a tortoise disease?
Turtle coli or something.
Turtle coli?
I'm not sure what it is, but they have told us, you know. And
stay clean. Keep clean.
Which is good. It's good to keep clean. Charlie, you know about turtles?
Yeah, I've had turtles for about 5 or 6 years, and finally, I mean, they really do a lot more than you think.
All right, well, talk to us. What do they do? And do you have tortoises or turtles?
I had turtles. I looked at tortoises, and I never got a tortoise, but I always had, like, red-eared spiders or painted turtles, the kind of common ones. And, I mean, you have to... With those guys, you got to keep their, they've got a tank that you have to keep clean. I mean, they grow. They actually get a lot bigger. And tortoises, like the tortoises you're talking about, they're not going to be like the big land tortoises that you see walking through, you know, different parts of the country. But, I mean, they still get big. You got to take care of them. And it's just like having a dog. But like you said, it's like having a dog for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, I think this is going to be a regret. I'm going to regret this decision. But
is it like having a dog?
No.
Like, I mean,
at least if you have a giant tortoise, you can use it as a moving coffee table.
Yeah,
if you're
I guess
having
you could.
A picnic.
Yeah, there
right.
you go. There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Let me say this real quick, though, quick to give you something similar. I've got two parrots.
Yeah.
Okay. They're both going to live to be 60. Oh. One is 15. One is 18, and I'm 65. What do I do with them?
Put them in your will. Who's going to take care of them? Seriously.
No, seriously, I agree with you. Because my kids, none of my kids want them.
Do they talk?
You know, Yeah, the one picked up a lot of my sayings. So,
we can't say those on the air. I wanted to hear if the parrot talks.
Yeah, I mean, they talk and stuff, but still and all, I mean, you know, it's a commitment. And you have, you know, I feed them every day. I got to clean them, you know, clean their cages twice a week. And
fresh water.
Yeah, fresh water every day. Well, the military macaw calls it agua. I don't know where he picked that up, but he says agua.
He's right.
Has he traveled?
Right. He must have.
I guess. But, you know, I mean, like I said, this is a long-term commitment that your son better think about, because when he goes to college, who's going to watch the turtle?
Well, can I tell you the cutest little thing? He's 13 years old, almost 14. He just said, mm-hmm. Mom, can I ask you a question? When I go to college, would you take care of these turtles? And I said, absolutely. I'm just happy he's talking about going to college.
Right. Oh, okay.
Right. That's the main thing. I agree with you. Because when my one son went to college, we ended up with his Rottweiler, which was fine because she was a great dog. But, you know, at least he's aware of the fact that, you know, somebody's going to have to watch out for these animals.
Well, he's making the commitment. So I hope he wants a turtle, two turtles around for 40 or 50 years.
Tortoises.
See?
You will insult the tortoise if you call it a turtle. That's the biggest insult you could possibly throw at a tortoise.
All right. He called it a tortle this morning because he combined the two. So I said, you know, see, you slip every once in a while.
But there you go.
Thanks for your advice, Charlie.
Yeah, tell him, you know. Good, guys.
Thanks, Charlie.
Probably want a cracker?
Tortoises don't say that. I thought of a name for one of them.
What?
Will Torte.
He loves Will Forte.
Think
so,
about it.
I kind of like
that
it.
That could be good.
I like Shel Silverstein.
Silverstein.
That's it.
And we've come full circle, people.
That's fantastic.
We should wrap this up right now.
That is fantastic.
Let's take a break.
A break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. When you were gone last week, there was a story about in Kentucky. I'm almost positive Kentucky. I'm 90% sure. In Kentucky, they built the Ark, Noah's Ark. They built another version of Noah's Ark. You're actually coming close to rivaling them. Like, if they run out of animals at your place, you're almost there.
Yeah, especially because I have two. We will have two turtles. But I only have one dog, so does that mean I have to get another dog?
You should get another dog. You want to have two. Noah's rule, you got to have two of each kind.
I have two boys.
Two boys.
Do I get two husbands?
That's up to you.
That's one's enough, trust me.
Right. You don't need more friction.
No. But I always had pets growing up. I mean, my sister was saying that before I was born, they had turtles. I remember my brother had a snake. I do remember the turtles, actually.
You did
have
some when you were little?
They were painted turtles. My grandfather was really handy, and he built, like, a bunch of wooden hutches in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I had a rabbit named Nosy for, like, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
We had dogs. We had hamsters.
Concurrently. You'd have them all at the same time.
Yeah, hermit crabs.
Yep. Because I established early on that I didn't like animals.
Although your mom tried.
We had almost everything because they kept bringing home more animals thinking, I bet this is the one you'll like. And I would say, no, it doesn't matter what kind you bring. I just don't want them. And they go, but we'll find one. And we did. We had a couple of different turtles over the years. And they were always really like 3 or 4 inches. They were never really big.
My sister said they used to sell them at dime stores when we were
growing up. They absolutely did. One of the two dime stores in Ford City had like all these tanks of them.
Yeah.
You'd pick them out. And they weren't expensive. They were like $1 or $2. And they wouldn't live very long.
When you think about it, though, that's so sad. Because people are shopping and they drag their kids with. And
right.
It's like, oh, fine, I'll get you a turtle. It'll be dead in a week anyway.
Right.
I bet they went through a lot of those little mini turtles.
I remember on two different occasions when we got them, like in your situation, it's already been established which ones you're getting. But I remember my brother sitting in front of the tanks for like a half an hour, 45 minutes, trying to figure out which one seemed the friendliest, which is ridiculous because I think you got to agree with me. I think they're all equally as non-friendly. They don't really do much. They just kind of crawl around.
Well, we were told that these tortoises were handled a lot, so they're used to people. There are some that I guess could be kind of skittish.
Yeah.
There are people like that.
But even in a best-case scenario, what would you do? I mean, other than just holding them, what will you do with them?
Teach them tricks?
Teach them turtle tricks and tortoise tricks?
I don't know what they are. Here, walk through this hula hoop.
If you bring the tortoise in and it can ride a unicycle, then the sky's the limit. Whatever you want. I would love to see that.
Oh. This is just the voice of reason here. Elaine, you have a tortoise or had one for quite some time, huh?
I have a tortoise, and I've had him for 34 years.
Oh, man.
And yes, I still have him.
What do you do with him?
Well, I was telling your producer, they really do become acclimated. I have him on a stand. He lives in a 20-gallon tank. So he isn't real big because of his habitat.
Yeah.
But if I pull out a chair and I keep it in the eating, he's in the eating area. If I pull out a chair or something, he'll come right over to the corner closest to where I'm sitting, and he comes all out of his shell.
What?
And I can, they live primarily on land. However, we do go for a bath occasionally when I'm cleaning his tank.
And when you say we, you mean separately, right? Please tell me you mean separately.
Well, yeah, I have a double sink.
Okay.
So, you know, that works.
All right, good.
And so they really do develop a personality.
Oh, that's cool.
I take him out. I let him on the floor.
Yeah.
And he walks on the floor. And the veggies and the fruit.
Yeah, you can feed him.
Very healthy, is he?
Oh, yeah, better than me.
Oh, all right. Well.
Because they eat little pellets, and then you have to give them some, like, maybe I can take some kale from
Dave Bennett.
Yeah. Because they're supposed to have like some romaine lettuce, maybe kale, some fruits.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fun.
Yep.
Like for all of us around the diet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
only occasional sliders.
Yeah. No, but he does get moist. Always I have moist dog food.
Really?
A particular. Yeah. That is a staple. Always, you have to change it all the time. But that's the staple for him. He has special shell cream.
You got to rub shell cream on him?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, that's part of having a tortoise, Wendy. Shell cream.
Wendy, be really careful. I don't know what you're going to use for his bedding. I use cat litter, which is just clay.
Yeah.
But be very, very careful that you don't buy any of that stuff with chemicals in it.
Right. It's all lined with, like, wood chips or something. That's what they said to use for the turtles.
Yeah. Okay.
The enclosure has been ready for the last week.
Oh, it has?
We've been
waiting
the arrival of the... What made you get a tortoise 34 years ago, Elaine? I'm just curious about... And what's his name or her name, and how can you tell?
My son was 8 years old, and he wanted a tortoise.
That's it.
And he was bawling his eyes out because my daughter was getting Pete Trace Lovebirds for her birthday.
This is you in 34 years, by the way.
I
know. This is
I'm
going
to be calling in. Who will be doing this show then?
And so that's how he came to be. And then, you know, the kid grew up and went away and all those things. And I said, oh, his name. My son, I said, if you don't name him, I'm going to call him Spot. He never named him, so I called him Spot.
In 34 years, you're going to be calling Grace Cochran's show here on WGN and telling them about how 34 years ago you bought a tortoise.
Elaine, thank you so much, and good luck with Spot. I appreciate the call.
Going strong. You have fun. They can become pet-like.
I really enjoyed taking care of the one over the summer for the school,
yeah.
But I knew I was able to give it back.
Sure. So, not this time. Not for 34 more years.
They're not much trouble. He'll be fine.
You'll be fine, Wendy.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thanks,
I really
Elaine.
Appreciate it. Someone says you shine them up with turtle wax.
Do that.
No.
I'll come over for that one.
And someone else said that my husband and I have no children right now, but we currently have a cat, two dogs, and two fainting goats. Do they really exist?
Yeah, they do. They really do.
Our friends told us we need to have a kid before we end up with a whole petting zoo. Do they really? What they with loud noises?
Yeah, they do.
The what
noise.
Fun is that? You can never throw them a party.
No, that's true. A surprise party out the window. You can't do it. All right, a break. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Wow, Wow.
Yes.
Good call. Wow. Very good call.
We should save this for Steve Dale when he comes in later on in the month.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a great idea. You know who's here, Wendy? A friend to the show, friend to America, David Hochberg is sitting right between us.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm
Everything
fantastic.
Good?
Yeah, it's great.
You look good.
I
You've
feel
been
good.
Working out,
been
losing
working
weight.
Out. I've been getting taller.
That's not happening.
Yeah, no.
You're
yeah, working
for
out.
The Olympics. I
I'm training
you
for
can
the
tell
Olympics.
People that.
Yes, the corned beef eating Olympics.
I'll join you on that one.
You're going to bring home the gold, I feel.
I'm
going to
bring home the gold. Have a couple. Yeah. How many corned beef sandwiches can you eat? And under as fast as Michael Phelps, Phelps
Michael the Phelps. Swimmer.
Can swim the 440 yard dash, whatever
mm-hmm.
he does,
mm-hmm.
we have to eat as many corned beef sandwiches.
Wow.
That's so as he's swimming, we're eating corned beef sandwiches.
To bring home the gold.
Bring
Spelled
home the gold.
G-O-U-L-D.
Exactly.
David, it's always fun to see you.
Very good.
You're always helping people. You're a saint. You're going to be a saint at some point.
I am
point.
A saint. Saint Hochberg. You're going to plant me. A statue of me in your front lawn and your home will be worth $50,000 more when you go to sell it.
I have to tell you, you've really helped me enhance my credit. Creditly, I was credit challenged like so many people out there, and I'm still moving up the ladder by all the advice you have given me.
Doesn't it feel good, though?
Yeah.
To like go get a car and see that your credit scores aren't, it doesn't start with a 5 and that it starts with a 7 and the amazing better rate that you received on a car loan or car lease, whatever you did to finance
yes.
your car.
Can you, because people hear that and they don't understand the semantics of how that can be.
Huge.
Explain. It does make a giant difference, you having a better credit score
sure.
when it comes to your payments and getting a car. And explain to people how that is.
Credit score is the only way that the creditor, in your case when you went to buy a car, in my case when you go to get a mortgage,
mm-hmm.
it proves your ability to repay the debt.
You're so less of a risk.
You're less of a risk. The higher the score, the more apt you are to pay your credit cards on time, the more apt you are to pay your mortgage on time, your car loan on time. So the higher your credit scores, the better the rate you get because you're lower credit risk.
Mm-hmm.
The lower the credit score, the higher the credit risk you are because you've shown a propensity to what? Not pay
screw
your
up.
Bills.
Right.
Well, did not screw up's a big word. And it listen, life happens to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have financial challenges for a number of different reasons, divorce, death, job loss, injury, you know, just and then irresponsibility with credit and booze and drugs and all that stuff. So there's a lot to go into screwing up,
right?
You know, intentionally and unintentionally.
Sure.
Okay, you lose your job, and you could either, like, you know, what do you got to do? You got to feed your kid and make your mortgage payments. So
yeah.
What do? You load up the credit cards.
Yep.
You know, you got to have breakfast on the table. You got to have lunch on the table. You know, you got to have dinner on the table. You got to send them to school. You got to buy them clothes. You got to do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cheap. I've got 3 girls. Okay, I've got 2 going to summer camp. I got three of them in camp now, and then I got summer camps Sunday. I don't even know what it's costing me. I don't want to know what it's costing me, but it ain't cheap.
Right.
Okay, so
here it comes.
It's crazy. What, $8,000 for summer? 4 weeks. What do they do at summer camp for $8,000?
Baskets.
$8,000.
I don't know if that's 1 or 2.
You
I
might
think
be,
that's 2.
You might, like, I think someone's overcharging you. For
I don't.
Summer
whatever.
I'm going to start a summer camp.
It's like ridiculous.
But
for
you
the
know,
summer
here's
camp.
The thing that I didn't realize, and it's just you know, you learn as you go through life.
Sure.
You know, when you do have trouble, you think, oh, I have never been late with a mortgage payment, ever, ever, ever.
Ever. That saved you.
Yes, but there is like a $40 Kohl's charge that took my credit down.
Yeah.
I didn't even know I had that going.
That's kicking you right in the teeth. And I always say this, and we talked about this, I think the last couple of times I was on, the parking ticket that the valet guys, you take your car and park in the front of a fire plug and you get the ticket and they pick up your car and throw the ticket away. And then you've got a collection because, you know, the city of Chicago is not going to wait around for you to pay the ticket. They're going to sell it off to a collection company at pennies on the dollar just to get some revenue coming in. And there goes 40, 50 points off your credit. I mean, a lot of people don't even realize that.
And this is a good thing. It's a good question from Casey. Hey, Casey.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was thinking of getting refinanced, which is cool, but we had to buy a new car a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
The old one died. I have Credit Karma app on my phone, so my credit score is 730.
Right.
We go in to buy the car. They pull it up under TransUnion. It's 606.
Yeah.
Ours varied, too, a little bit from what...
No, that's a big variance. Yeah, the problem is that I like Credit Karma. It's run by TransUnion, but that's a recreational pull. Okay, no pun intended. Okay, that's like a soft pull. When you go in to get financing, it's considered a hard pull. Again, no pun intended. So it's a much tougher grading scale when you go to get financing as opposed to just go on and see what your credit scores are. And, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, I'm 700 at Credit Karma or this credit reporting agency, you know, told me this. I pull their credits 580. And then they get mad at me. I'm like, what the hell did I do? I just hit enter, and here comes the credit report. So
it can vary, but Credit Karma is good.
Credit Karma is a good site. I'm having lunch with the CEO of TransUnion right after I get out of here, David Emery. So it's
that's what saved me, because I found out there were a couple of collections with parking tickets that I didn't even know about, Casey. So you can dispute them, and now they're off my report.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what happened. I'm seeing stuff on there is not mine. I was an authorized user for an elderly relative that lived to me.
Whammo.
Lived with me.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not my responsibility.
Listen, if your name's on something, you're going down with that person if the person blows off a credit card. Now, the good thing is you're an authorized user, so it's a very simple fix. Okay, Casey, call up the credit card company that you're an authorized user on, that has the card that you're authorized to use, and ask them to remove you as an authorized user. It's one phone call. It's 30 seconds. Probably have to wait on hold for 30 minutes. But once you get somebody, it's a 30-second phone call. All of that derogatory history of the person, the elderly person that was living with you that couldn't pay their bills on time, is gone and off your credit report in under 30 seconds. And then you have to go back to the credit agency, ask them to update your credit report, and it should be instantaneous, and that information will be gone. Yeah, it's that simple.
Good luck, Casey. You got to do it.
There you go.
Thank you.
Quick question from a texter, and I bet a lot of people are thinking about this. 773, I'm a stay-at-home mom with my baby. My husband works. He has a low credit score. I don't.
Yeah.
We're looking for a house. Will we be able to get one with our scores? And that's what you got to worry about, because somebody's got a better credit report or credit score.
It's not making
But they
money.
Don't have income.
Right. It goes off the lower the two borrowers. So when people in the banking industry pull a credit report, we pull what's called a tri-merge. We get three credit reports, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. We take the middle credit score of the lowest borrower. So a lot of times what we have, I'm doing a loan for a lady right now. She's a 620. He's a 720. She's not making any money. He's making the money. I said, okay, sweetheart, here's the deal. If we keep you on it, your rate's going to go up 0.75 points.
Yeah.
Or we could drop you because you're not making any money. You're bringing in a ton of debt. That's why your credit's lower than your husband. Or you could run with the husband who's got a professional W-2 six-figure job and you could get 0.75 points lower. Some people are like, dump me and go with the husband. I've got some lady up north that refused to come off the mortgage and the rate was 0.5 point higher because she had to be on the mortgage. Even though if you're not on the mortgage, you're still on the deed. You still own the home.
Oh, okay. That's true.
She's still protected, but she was dead set on being on the mortgage.
What's her advantage in that?
Paying about $125 more.
No, but if they get a divorce, she's
still on the deed, though.
She's on the deed, and she's wrong. But listen, I've got enough problems with my own family. I'm not getting involved with somebody else.
Okay.
You know, I'm just like, hey, you know, and then the guy comes back to me. How come the rate's so much higher? I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? I've been telling you this.
All right,
dump the wife, and then save the half a point.
He's gonna
dump the wife. Keep the wife, but dump her off the loan.
I can see the vein.
Who took the over? I'm just like,
all right, calm down. It's all right. Everything's gonna be okay. David Hochberg is here.
You want to pay? You want to pay $1,500 more a year?
It's
fine, we'll leave the wife.
It's okay, no, it's all
right. Then he gets fired. He fires on me. Why he's paying $1,500 more a year?
It's okay. All right. Some limeade for Mr. Hochberg, please. We'll take a quick break. We'll sponge off more of your calls and texts. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He is an excitable boy. He's David Hochberg. He's our excitable boy. And, I don't know where to begin. Someone had mentioned an authorized user.
Yes. What is an authorized user?
Well, Carol, is that what you want to know?
I'm in a similar situation. I'm an authorized user on my elderly dad's credit card.
Okay.
And when I called the credit card company, they said, no, I'm not responsible for the bill. And they sent me a letter saying so. But I'm still, I just got my credit report, and it's on there that I owe this much money.
Right. You might not be responsible for the bill per what the credit card company told you, but you're still getting the history, good or bad, of the transactions that the cardholder is doing. So you're still on as an authorized user. You might not be contractually obligated to pay the bill, but you're going up or down with the tide. If they pay their bills on time, it's a good thing. If they don't pay their bills on time or carry large balances, it's a bad thing. That's it.
Can I get that off my credit report?
Yeah, you have to get, it's like I told the other guy, whoever, Craig, whatever the other gentleman's name was, you have to call up the credit card company, give them your name, probably your social security number, tell them you're an authorized user, and ask them to be removed as an authorized user, and then all of that history gets deleted from your report.
Okay.
Instantaneously. Well, instantaneously.
Thank you, Carol. Good luck to you.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Someone wants to know, how does co-signing my kid's student loans affect my credit? And this is an important question.
Yeah, well, co-signing for anything impacts your credit. Number one, you're adding more debt onto your credit, which is not a good thing for your credit scores. And you're running the risk of Junior blowing off a payment and taking you down with it. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to in the past 16 years that have co-signed to do their nephew, their cousin, their brother, their sister, their kid a solid by helping them out to qualify for a car loan, a mortgage, a student loan, and then they thank Uncle Bob by throwing a torpedo down their throat by not making a payment.
But what's the safer alternative if your child comes
co-sign.
To you? I know, but if it's your own child.
Have your kid get a job, get off their ass and get a job.
All right, there you have it.
All right, solid advice. David's job
put down
fair
the phone with their
Pokemon
walking around. Maybe going to the mall and say, hey, I'd like a job.
You're not going to co-sign for your kid's loan someday.
If one of the girls came to you and said, Dad, or Mr. Hochberg, as they refer to you,
right.
Mr. Hochberg, would you please co-sign for my student loan? You're going to say yes.
I'm gonna say, well, and they will have a job and they will have money to put down. Yes, and then I will co-sign for the loan. Right. I'm not just going to co-sign. And then I will make sure that the payment is made on time
because
they will pay me, and I will make sure that the money is in their account and goes out.
Yeah.
A lot of people co-sign and then put their head in the clouds.
You have to stay active on this.
And don't check to make sure that the bills are getting paid.
Right.
Guess what? Whammo. Okay? You want your credit score to drop 40, 50 points, co-sign for something, and watch the person you co-signed for not make a payment. Or worse yet, watch that property go into foreclosure. Oh, yeah. You've got a foreclosure on your credit report, too.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get refinanced with that. Yeah, it's a little waiting period.
All right. A couple minutes, a couple more questions, so we'll try and get through them. John, quickly, you had a question for David Hochberg.
Hi. Yes, I have a house that will probably eventually be foreclosed on, but also have a cottage that we're up to date with our payments, but the interest rate is in the sixes.
Okay, how many payments have you missed on the home that's going into foreclosure?
Oh, it's been a long time.
All right, and you still own the house that you haven't made a mortgage payment on?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you're going to enjoy that 6% payment for an awful long time until you sell. Are you a veteran?
No.
Okay, so once the cottage gets sold, the clock starts and when you're going to be able to do something on the home that you got a 6% mortgage on.
Okay.
So your name has to be taken off the deed. Once your name is off the deed, the clock starts on when you could do something with your primary residence, which is 3 years with an FHA loan, 7 year with the Fannie Freddie loan.
Okay, thank you.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
Thanks, John. I feel bad for John.
I do, too.
I don't know what John's waiting for. Sell the damn house.
Yeah,
call up an attorney and short sell it, you know?
Is that his best move there?
Yeah.
It would be, right?
Yeah, short sell it. You know, some people have money but don't want to bring the money in to get rid of the house that's in foreclosure.
Yeah.
Now, by not making the mortgage payment and by going into foreclosure status,
you're going to lose it anyway.
Not only that, now you've added the bank's attorney and you've got all of those fees, you got all of those bills. It's ridiculous. It's exhausting.
Yeah. All right. Dave, really quickly, you might be our last caller. David Hochberg here.
Yeah. David, I just was surprised with an announcement of a divorce that's neither here nor there. We have two properties right now, one in Wisconsin, which is rental property, and they want to purchase that. We got about 10 grand equity going to come out of that maybe next June. And the house we're living in now, we're going to see probably 20,000 equity out of that when we sell that.
Okay.
I want to purchase another house now for myself.
Okay.
Do I have to wait till all the dust settles and all the cash is gone because we threw that at the bills that were outstanding so that nobody got broke with a whole bunch of credit card bills?
Right. So here's the rule. Here's the rule on that. And I'm either sorry that you're getting a divorce or congratulations is in order. So whatever, fits for you, so be it. But here's the deal with the divorce. OK, if you're not divorced and the divorce isn't final and you don't have a court signed document saying the divorce is final, you need to have a signed separation agreement. It's got to be signed and notarized between you and your future ex-spouse. stating what the financial obligations are between both of you. I don't know if you have kids. I don't know if there's any type of, you know, if you're getting money from her, if she's getting money from you. You've got to lay out the terms of the separation pending the final divorce, both signed and notarized. Once you have that, then it falls into an income category. Can you qualify carrying three properties? I mean, that's what it comes down to. Well, most people can't, but if you can qualify carrying three properties, after you get the terms written out and signed and agreed to by your ex-wife or soon-to-be ex-wife, then you can, you know, you can move ahead. Does that make sense?
Okay, so we got to have it all down in writing and notarized first.
Correct. It doesn't have to be a final divorce decree. It just has to be a signed agreement between you and your future ex-spouse exactly how the terms and if there's any money change and if there's any kids or whatever, how the bills will be paid. Who's going to cover the mortgages on those two properties? Who's going to cover all the taxes, insurance, and upkeep on the two properties? It's got to be detailed. If you want more information on this, because I've been through a divorce and I'm happily married now, but I know, you know, what a mess it could be, and we do a lot of loans for people going through divorce. You could just go to WGNDavid.com. That's the easiest way. And just shoot me an email, and we'll get back to you, bud.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Dave. Take care. Thank you, David Hochberg. We appreciate it. Again, if people want to reach you, they want to go to?
You go to WGNDavid.com. You could give me a call. I get accused of talking fast, so I always tell people, listen faster. So here, 312-751-1333. One more time, Bill. 312-751-1333. And I will bring corned beef sandwiches.
Oh.
From the Corned Beef Factory on Lake Street the next time. I know you like a mix.
Bring some horseradish with it.
I'll bring whatever you want.
And Patty, we didn't have time to talk about her short sale, so Patty can call you at 312-751-1333 as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Kim Gordon has the news in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you know what I just realized? We had David Hochberg in, and now we have the exact opposite of David Hochberg in.
Dr. Smooth Over Everything.
That's right.
Dr. John Duffy in the studio, clinical psychologist, life coach, author, The Available Parent is his great book. I suggest you read it. And how are you, Dr. Duffy?
I'm great. How are you guys today?
Couldn't be better.
Excellent.
Couldn't be better. You wanted to talk about a topic that Wendy and I have discussed earlier in the week, but is this red hot? And that's what's going on with Pokemon in all over the country.
I'm not surprised it's come up. And I'm not sure what the differences are, so maybe we can figure this out as we sit here. But
yes.
But there's a lot I like about it, because I think finally the basement-dwelling kids are out and about and playing and cooperating. And
meeting other kids
meeting
and
becoming
other kids. Social.
Even meeting some of – I heard a great story yesterday, the day before, about a kid who saw his bully in the park.
Right.
And the bully approached him, and he's scared to death. And the bully says, oh, you're missing it because over by the hill here, there's a whole bunch of stuff you got to collect.
So it brought them together.
Right. It brought them together. I mean, and brothers are working together, and parents and kids are out there. You
right.
know, so
I got the app.
Did you really? See, there you go.
So sworn enemies, Hatfields and McCoys, are coming together. For the common bond of finding monsters that do not exist.
Right, exactly. I'm not saying that's happening across the board, but it's happened at least once that I can account
for. All right, well, then
for.
That's fine then, I guess. Do you believe people go, this is great exercise. Is it great exercise? I guess it is to some extent.
I think it's okay
great
exercise. I think it's more that, you know, it's July and kids are out. Where,
right.
you know, normally the video game kid is going to be in
right.
front of a screen. And
in
now,
the air conditioning.
Right, in the air conditioning. Now all these kids are out. I mean, you know, we can look out this window for 10 minutes. We're going to see somebody
right.
looking for these things, right?
Yeah. The mayor walked by. Was looking
right?
for him yesterday.
Well, I hope Rob
weird.
Hatched that egg.
My kids went out for several hours, I was telling you the other night.
Mm-hmm.
They were out past curfew. I'm like, where are you? Downtown LaGrange, there were a bunch of kids there. Have you noticed kids in our neighborhood all over?
I have. I live, you know, and work downtown, so I walk both ways. And every single time I see kids, and they do these kind of ridiculous gymnastics. They're walking around in circles, and they're passing each other, and they're switching phones. And
mm-hmm.
It's just kind of fun to see the cooperation. And in these times where, you know, we've got all this heavy stuff in the headlines, these kids are playing for the first time. And it might feel just ridiculous to a lot of us.
Right.
But to me, that feels like a good sign.
It's
that
a good start. Hopeful.
It's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were against it because you're like, why don't you read a book? Why should you do this? But somebody texted and said their kid goes to summer camp and has a part-time job. So at the end of the day, that's what they want to do to chill out. They don't want to read a book at that point.
Right. Right. And listen, I get your point, Bill. And if it were up to me, you know, at the end of every day,
yeah,
every kid has spent a half an hour reading. You
right.
know,
wouldn't
I think
that be
these,
nice?
Yeah, I think these can exist in the same universe. And I hope that happens.
Right.
But for now, and this isn't ideal necessarily, but I will absolutely take it. It feels like a vast improvement.
How about I'm a fan of budgeting your time. And I know everybody's budget of time
I'm
is different.
I'm terrible
but,
at that.
Well, it's not easy to do. It isn't, and some people are better at it than others, but you want to have a little bit of everything, a little bit of exercise, a little bit of knowledge. You know, that ideally, that would be great, right?
Absolutely. You know, the more the kids I work with, if their days were structured, you know, so that there was some time for Pokemon, some time for the gym, some time for reading, some time for doing some stuff around the house, and maybe some just free time, that's a well set up day. That's a
right.
great way to keep a kid off a couch.
Right.
And how does a kid do that? I mean, you're saying this as an adult. It's easier... not for me, but for you to budget your time now. If I get some free time, I'm going to binge watch Orange is the New Black. I could be doing something more productive,
mm-hmm.
but I need some downtime too.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it harder for a kid to budget their time like that?
Especially now. Now most of their time is real, real loose. I had a kid in my office the other day. I wish I could remember the name of the app he cited, but he talked about this app where it was designed for teenagers to budget their time, to budget their days. And I think that's like kind of a great idea because I think to do it organically and ask yourself to do it organically and really stick to it
tough.
Is really hard this time of year.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not Evernote, is it?
No, it is okay. not Evernote. I would remember that. I'll think of it and I'll let you guys know for sure.
I need it.
Somebody sent me a video yesterday of a mom who has a thing called Chardonnay Go. And what it
I
is,
saw
is
that.
It's for moms who just walk around town finding glasses of wine strategically hidden. And there are plenty of them.
Oh,
the lady
listen,
had no problem finding any.
I am certain that people are going to find their variations on this
yeah.
that's going to work for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So overall, and this, let's be honest, this is a fad. In 2 weeks, this will be old news already.
No, because they're now going to let people advertise, like you can buy a Poke Spot. So say WGN Radio wanted to buy a Poke Spot, we'd buy it, and then you'd go WGN Radio. So they're selling advertising now to pick a spot to
oh,
go.
Wow.
That's genius.
Wow.
So the fad may last longer than 2 weeks, and I suspect other video games are going to find ways to kind of capitalize
sure, of
on
course.
This. But to your point, my hope is that this is a first step toward something where kids are out and about more, that they recognize, oh, there's a secondary benefit to the sun being out and me being
right.
out underneath it.
Right. It's nice. It's nice.
Right.
I told Wendy this yesterday. There are people who are now called Poke Coaches. So they make $20 an hour and they hang out with your kids and they help them find the different monsters around at the tune of $20 an hour. Wow.
Correct. I mean, so
wow.
You can take anything too far. I think that's probably proof of that.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Because part of the fun, I think, is figuring this stuff out on your own. And
yeah.
it doesn't sound... I'm not a Pokemon expert, but
mm-hmm.
it doesn't sound that complicated to me.
All right. We need to take a quick break. Dr. John Duffy is here, and your podcasts are fantastic. You can find them on your website, which is?
DrJohnDuffy.com.
Plain and simple.
Yep.
You can also find it on WGN Plus. We'll take a quick break and back with your calls, 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Sure, this is not John Bon Jovi singing the Pokemon theme.
I don't think it's John.
Doesn't it sound like
it
him?
It does sound like
a teenage John Bon Jovi.
Yes, 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 it does. Dr. John Duffy is here, formerly a teen Dr. John Duffy, but now he's present day Dr. John Duffy, talking about various topics. This is a great topic. How to maintain family resilience and talking openly during troubled times. And these are troubled times, aren't they?
These are troubled times. And what we tend to do, I think, and maybe this goes back a generation, is we batten down the hatches. We protect our kids from any bad news as best we can. And oftentimes we get together with other families, we kind of separate the children from the adults. And the
yeah.
adults have the adult conversation, the kids have the kids conversation. I was at a friend's house the other night. And the kids just, for whatever reason, hung in with us. And they sat and we talked about pop culture and we talked about music and we talked about kind of the state of the world today and politics. And the kids were amazing. It was really interesting to hear what they had to say. They were more hopeful, more thoughtful, more encouraging than any of us were. Most of us were kind of like holding a position, whereas the kids were like, well, why do you believe that? And asking really good questions. And I think we dismiss that, the utility of that, way too readily, because we have so much we can learn from our kids and they want to be part of the conversation. That's what surprised me, is that they weren't budging. They wanted to hear what we had to say. Mm-hmm. They asked really, really good questions. So one thing I'm thinking is we need to do more of that. Like, you know, within our families and with other families, is invite kids into the conversation, because we just don't do that enough.
It's a great idea, isn't it? I always feel that our best conversations are when it's all four of us talking about something. So why not extend that when you have other people over? Make that part of the night.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think it's really good for kids too, because I think they feel validated, important, like their point of view matters.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So with what's gone on with the police shootings,
yeah.
We've talked about this with you a little bit in the past, John. Mm-hmm. How do you decide exactly how much to say to a kid? Is it based on their age? Is it based on just the scope of how much they can handle? How do you know?
It's got to be in part based on both those things, right? You have to know your kids well enough to know, like, okay, every gruesome detail is not necessary for my six-year-old, you know? So it's important to kind of separate kids out a little bit. But I think a lot of us assume our kids know less than they do. They know a lot because they just have so many ways of learning information, and that they're less resilient than they are. So my bias is you can usually tell your kids at the very least the bones of what's going on and ask them, you know, well, so what do you think about this? How do you feel about this? Because I'm really sad about it, you know, and I'm not sure what it means for all of us, and draw them out. Let them talk about their opinions about it a little bit. But, for younger kids, I think you want to really titrate down what it is that you share with them specifically.
And maybe just come right out and say, you know, you've heard about what's happened in Dallas. Do you have any questions?
Absolutely.
You know, because maybe they haven't heard about it, or maybe they don't understand it.
Yep. No, absolutely. Really good point.
It's okay to admit to your children that you don't know the answers either, isn't it?
I think it's important to admit to your children you don't know the answers. I mean, I think it's kind of an important part of a family to say, well, let's talk about it. And let's
watch
find out
together.
Yeah, let's see if we can figure something out, you know? Like, let's see if we can make some small inroad from this house that might make some little bit of difference, you know, and have some butterfly effect that's going to have an impact somewhere else.
I can't speak for your parents, but I know my mom would never admit she was wrong about something. And if she didn't know, she'd make something up and sound convincing. It's a different time now.
It's a different time. And when a lot of us are inclined to do that. I work with a lot of parents who will say, well, I don't know why my kid is anxious. I never felt anything like that. And that doesn't do kids any favors. I think the more we show that, hey, I'm flawed too, and I made it this far, that gives kids a whole lot of confidence, and their anxiety level comes way down when they realize mom and dad aren't perfect.
Last week, one of my daughters is working for the summer as a camp counselor. And in the midst of everything that went on, actually, it was the night after the Dallas shootings. Mm. One of the kids came in, and some of the kids were more upset, and other of the kids just were unfazed by it all. But there was one kid in particular that didn't want to do anything that day. He didn't want to participate in any of the activities. And my daughter said, what's going on? And he said, what's going on is I watched the news last night and I saw what was going on, and I'm afraid, and I don't know what's going to happen next. And I think this is going to get worse instead of better. And it was interesting to see my daughter now being on the side of somebody who had to kind of help somebody younger than her figure things out. I was proud of her for the way she handled it. But she said this was a kid who, like many adults, watched what went on and just said, I don't know what to make of this.
What a cool interaction, right? So you think about how differently your daughter could have handled that. You know, like, oh, this didn't affect us, and, you know, you didn't know any of these guys, so shake it off and move on, instead of, like, having the empathy and the thoughtfulness to pause and let him have his say, you know, critical. I mean, I think their generation is really good at doing that for one another. So that's it's a great story. And I think kids do that more than we know.
Yeah.
Your kids are so nice and your wife is so nice. What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
Can we touch on the hashtag Chicago Wins really quickly?
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of kids about, like, you know, so on the idea that, you know, you start locally in terms of fostering change. One boy and I were talking yesterday about what happened in New York about 20 years ago, where they had this massive crime problem where, you know, and murder was a big part of it. And instead of going after the major crimes, what the city council and the mayor did is they went after graffiti in the subways and on the streets, thinking psychologically, if people recognize that these petty crimes aren't acceptable and aren't allowable in these areas, well, then major crimes are probably not going to be allowable either. And so civility kind of rose out of that. And to, I think, a lot of people's surprise, the crime rate in New York went down precipitously really quickly from that like little intervention that didn't cost a whole lot. And so we've been talking about this upcoming Cub Sox series and how, you know, vitriolic. I've been to a few of those games. You guys probably have
too. It's heated.
It's heated, right? Yep. It's wretched.
Sox are better.
There you have it, right?
Bill actually does like both of them.
I like them both. But I've been there and I've seen things, you know, people get nuts.
And when you're a fair weather fan, you're rooting for a winner.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
That's so I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
But the idea would be that, boy, if Chicago wanted to play some role in being an example, right, of, you know, kind of pulling things together and creating a lesser degree of strife and modeling something on a global level, the hashtag Chicago wins instead of Sox wins or Cubs win might mean a whole lot.
It's a better option.
It's a better option.
Wendy refuses.
I can't do
Will
it,
not
but
play
I'll think about
game.
It. It is a great idea, though.
It would be a little something, and it's kind of playful and fun, but a little something to say, hey, listen, this is a baseball game. We can create a little solidarity out of this, you know?
Yeah. I like it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Check him out, WGN Plus. There's the Dr. John Duffy podcast. Also on your website, which is?
www.drjohnduffy.com.
And read the available parent, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Always a pleasure to have you in here.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, John. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Where's my T-square?
Sometimes Frank Lloyd Wright would say, where's my T-square?
That what was about a game the compass?
That he and Mrs. Lloyd Wright would play at the house. Find the T-square. That's when things got crazy. Let's talk running, Wendy.
I thought we didn't have him.
I don't know. It looks like we do. Ella, if there's been a switch in the schedule.
Well, we're waiting for his phone call right now.
All right. Well, can I just say something if we're going to talk running?
Yes.
I see these things on the back of people's cars, and I didn't know what they were at first.
What is it?
It was like 13... I could be wrong here. 13.1 or 26.2.2.
I don't know what that is.
They're miles for marathons.
Oh. All right. And so their car ran a marathon. Is that what you're telling us?
See, now, if I could drive a marathon, I would totally do it.
Hey, and the winner again is Wendy Snyder in a Plymouth. Congratulations, Wendy. You've won another marathon.
We are going to talk to somebody who's actually running a marathon and doing so for various causes, and his name is Will Gain. Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm doing really well. More importantly, how are you?
We're doing well. I was trying to tell Bill about these stickers I see on the back of cars. Is it 13.1 and 26.2? What do those mean?
Yeah, that's for the half marathon. It's 13.1 miles, and the 26.2 is for the full marathon distance.
I had no idea until...
You cracked the code, Wendy.
I know. I couldn't figure it out. And I'm like, why does everybody have that on there? But running is, we've been doing it for years. I think the cavemen actually ran.
The first marathon was in caveman days. You're right.
The Neanderthal 13.2.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And someone from Kenya won that year. Did you know that?
But now, tell us about this Badwater 135 Ultra Marathon.
Yeah, the Badwater 135 is widely regarded as the world's toughest endurance event. It's a 135-mile run.
Oh, my God.
135-mile run.
All at one time?
Yeah, you have to complete it within 48 hours. But there are two other factors that make it a little bit tricky. Number one is it's in Death Valley next week. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at anything over 120 degrees. And you go over two mountain ranges, so it's the elevation, it's the heat, and it's the distance which makes it the world's toughest event.
And not very safe. I mean, remember when the Chicago Marathon was going on and the temperatures had peaked to over 90 degrees and everybody was worried about it?
Yeah,
this
right.
is like 10 times worse.
Yeah, well, there's two factors to bear in mind with this. Firstly, one of the hardest things about Badwater is getting into the event. It's a very strict application process. You send in your resume, you send in your athletic achievements, you send in answers to about 10 different questions. So they try and make sure that whoever does this has a realistic chance of finishing. The second thing is, if you do want to run through Death Valley, doing Badwater is probably the safest time because it's such a well-managed event. You've got some of the most experienced endurance professionals in the world. You've got medical teams all over the place. So there is as much support as you could possibly want to get through this safely, and nobody has ever died or been seriously ill from this event.
How about that? That's good news.
That is good news.
About how many participants will, on average, would you say?
There's a strict cap of 100 entrants. This year, we're down to 97 with a couple of withdrawals over the last couple of months. But the maximum number of people that are allowed to run this race is 100.
So if Wendy and I wanted to join in, there's a couple open spots.
Yeah, you can fill in the application form, send it across.
All right.
Chris, who's the race director, is an absolute legend, and I'm sure he would look at it.
All right.
Now, I noticed at our grade schools and junior highs, there's a program called Girls on the Run, which I have seen. It's a great little program where girls basically run after school. Tell us about this.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I'm doing Badwater is to raise funds for Girls on the Run. We are talking about the next generation of young women here, and it's a great charity for helping young women feel empowered, to feel confident, and to have the belief to go after any dream they want in life. And they've been a pleasure to work with. Oddly enough, they were just sending some emails through before I rang you guys. But the other key factor here is it's not just about the run, despite the fact that the word appears in the name. This is about a curriculum that teaches leadership skills. It teaches working in teams. It teaches self-awareness. So you kind of get this development of the mind as well as the body. But obviously, I can't say enough good things about them.
And what's so great about running, if that's something you're into, is, you know, it's men and women running together, girls and boys running together. You know, in tennis, you have your female division and mm-hmm. your men, baseball, all men. So this is really promoting gender equality and getting healthy and running all at the same time.
Absolutely right. And this is the primary reason that I'm running Badwater, to promote gender equality. Obviously, one avenue for that is Girls on the Run. But I also founded a site called echo37.com to promote gender equality. So I'm kind of going to correct something you said earlier on. It perhaps is cave people, but you're absolutely right. The great thing about something like Badwater is it a beacon of equality. And the thing to bear in mind is women have been the overall winners of Badwater. So Pam Reed, back in 2002, a mother of five weighing 100 pounds, she destroyed the rest of the field, and she came back the following year and won. As part of my training, I did a 100-mile run from Key West to Key Largo. And Ali Venti, she was the overall winner. In fact, in the 50-mile race for that event, 9 of the top 10 finishers were women. And there is an exaggerated difference in society between men and women, and one of the great things that events like Badwater promote is that everybody starts at the same start line. Everybody starts on the level playing field, and then everybody has the chance to work as hard as they want to achieve what they want.
Well,
promoting gender equality is a big part of this.
Can you explain something to me? In your traditional marathon, just over 26 miles, it is always men that win. When men and women are running together, men tend to win by several minutes. But in these ultra marathons, as you pointed out, it's the opposite. So how do you explain that exactly?
Well, you're absolutely right. And you're also seeing the same in long distance swimming. So this isn't just a running endurance factor. This is across a number of sports. And in fact, some scientists are starting to conduct studies and show that we're going to see a dilution of the gap between men and women in throwing-based activities because some of the golf and swimming, it's technique and not power. Now, what happens in long-distance endurance events is it's more about the mental strength and it's more about problem-solving and it's more about pacing than it is about power-based events. So whenever you have power as a dominant factor, the 100-meter sprint is a classic example, that is still going to favor men to some degree for obvious reasons. But as that becomes less of a factor and the playing field becomes more even, so it's endurance, it's mental, it's technique, then there isn't a great difference between men and women, and sometimes the guys are going to win, sometimes the girls are going to win.
Huh. Yeah, very interesting.
That is interesting. Wow. So it sounds like women are better problem solvers.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, Will Gain, when does this race begin?
So there are three waves that start this Monday in the evening. It's a night start. I start in the middle wave at 9:30 p.m. In Death Valley. And I then have, well, I, myself and my crew, because it's a mandatory crew requirement to do an event like this, that you have a support vehicle and people looking after you. I will then have 48 hours to cover that 135-mile distance.
Now, are there people that just don't make it and don't finish?
Yeah, I mean, one of the good things about Badwater, unlike some other endurance events, is they are genuinely trying to ensure that everybody makes it. But if we look at last year's figures, about an 75 to 80% completion rate. But in any event like this, sometimes people are just going to have a bad day. Sometimes people just aren't going to make it. But there's no doubt that the bulk of people that do this have been well vetted and will do everything they possibly can alongside their crew to finish the event.
Is there any time to sleep at all? It's essentially 135 miles is five marathons back to back to back. Is there any downtime where you can rest and sleep or not?
It's a choice. At the end of the day, the clock will not stop. And some participants will choose to have a 20-minute power nap. That's entirely up to them.
Yeah.
I find it difficult for a whole host of reasons. The adrenaline is obviously going through the body.
Right.
I've never been able to do it. And I just want to finish the thing and get it done. But some people get a lot of benefit from taking 20 minutes out to have a rest. And at the end of the day, this will be the longest event I've done. I've done 100-mile races before, but this is an extra, I don't know, 5 to 10 hours. So who knows how the body's going to react.
Well, good luck to you. If you could figure out a way how to sleep while running, I think you would have this mastered.
Work on that, Will.
And you are treating this as a fundraiser, and you have a donation page for Girls on the Run. Can you give us that information? And also echo37.com is a website and blog site to promote gender equality. Give us the information on how we can donate or fund your running.
Yeah, very easy. If you go onto Google, type in William Gain, and Gain is four letters, G for golf, A-N-E. Type in William Gain, CrowdRise, Girls on the Run. You'll see my page. I will send it across to your colleagues so you can put it on your website. Obviously, people go on, click donate, type in a big number, help the next generation of women, and then they get a thank you for their awesome contribution.
You're doing some great work, and we wish you success on the Badwater 135 Ultra Marathon. Good luck to you, Will Gain.
Thank you very much for your time today. It was great speaking to you.
Thank you so much.
135 miles in 48 hours.
A couple of spaces left. Let's get on the website and do it.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Ryan has the news coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I have promised my son, Michael, who's 17, who idolizes Brian Wilson, that we're going to go see him, and we're going to talk to Greg Kot after the news and find out what Kot's picks for Pitchfork are.
That'll be nice. Is it Ryan positive? How could you not hear Ryan Burrow and just have a big smile on your face? He's just so positive.
We always do.
Very positive.
I'm excited about going to Pitchfork, but I have a confession to make.
Which is what?
My son Michael loves Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
Michael's 17
years
old.
Don't you love Brian Wilson?
I do.
Wilson?
But Michael's all crazy because it's like, oh, Brian Wilson is coming to do the whole Pet Sounds album. He's going to do it in its entirety.
Yeah.
And I said, that's great. I'm taking you with. And he's like, really? I have to go with my mom?
Right.
But then he thought, you know what? If she's taking me to see Brian Wilson, I can go. That's cool. But I need to know, I've never been to Pitchfork, so Greg Kot is on the line with us right now. Rock critic, music journalist, what do you want to be called these days, Greg? Author.
Hanger-on.
Hanger-on.
Right, that'll all work, you know.
Wow.
The uncoolest person in the crowd.
Well, then how are you going to help me not be the uncoolest person in the crowd? Because I think, you know, my son is like, I'm going with you. What do I need to know so I look like I'm getting it all on at Pitchfork?
Well, you're cool just because you're going. I mean, it's I think Pitchfork is a festival for the music connoisseurs in Chicago. Lollapalooza is kind of the, you know, day in the park kind of crowd. The serious music fans go to Pitchfork, I think. And so from that standpoint, you're already cool, Wendy. And then so your son should be admiring you for that reason alone.
He should be.
And it's a great lineup. It really is a good lineup. You know, the only thing that could screw it up is the weather gets crappy. But in terms of the musical value, it's more bang for the buck than any festival in Chicago, I think.
I am so unhip because I'm looking at your article, Kot's Picks, 19 Bands Not to Miss at Pitchfork and all the rest. And, I mean, I'm like, Twin Peaks, oh, great, they're doing a little screening for the new Twin Peaks movie or series that's coming out. I'm very unhip.
No, well, this will give you a quick education. Let's put it that way. You'll see some of the bands that people do think are cool and are up and coming. Twin Peaks, for example, a really good Chicago band. A bunch of young guys started the band when they were just right in high school, and now they're in their early 20s. They're on their third record. Really good band. One of the best bands out of Chicago in recent years. But there's a lot of really good Chicago acts. I mean, this hip-hop act, Mick Jenkins, that's performing right after Twin Peaks, is also getting a lot of accolades. Chicago's hip-hop scene is probably one of the hottest in America right now, led by Chance the Rapper, and that guy named Kanye West was out of here a few years ago as well. So a lot of attention being paid to the Chicago hip-hop scene. So you can say, Wendy, that I saw Mick Jenkins, who is the next rising star out of Chicago hip-hop.
Greg, I'm looking at the diversity in this list, and it really is pretty vast. As you mentioned, there's quite a bit of hip-hop, but you also get Carly Rae Jepsen, and you also get Brian Wilson. That's quite a range.
Yeah, it is. Carly Rae is probably, you know, that the Canadian singer-songwriter. She's probably one of the most pop-leaning performers they've ever had at the festival. I mean, she's sold 20 million records since 2008. So it's interesting that they would book something like that. Usually they're a little bit more, you know, cutting-edge, avant-garde, but here they have a kind of a mainstream act. But she has gotten a lot of love for her songwriting chops. And Brian Wilson, every year, Pitchfork tries to book at least one kind of heritage act
that
has had a great deal of influence on young musicians today. And Pet Sounds, 50 years later, still resonates as one of those albums that sort of, you know, created a path for young musicians to go after. And, mainly because Brian essentially created that work on his own. He didn't really use the other Beach Boys on it except to sing the background harmonies, but it was basically his baby. I mean, he produced it, he wrote it, he arranged it, he did everything. And that was unusual when he did it in 1966. You didn't usually, a single artist usually didn't have that much control over their work, and Brian Wilson sort of usurped it. And ever since, artists have been saying, well, we can do that too, and been using Pet Sounds as a great deal of inspiration.
So this is a huge deal. He's going to go through the whole album of Pet Sounds. Am I correct in assuming this?
Yeah, he actually did this before, and I've seen him do it. The band he has is excellent. None of the Beach Boys themselves are on it on this tour. There may be one or two of the ancillary players that were in the Beach Boys back in the day, but it's mostly newer guys who are like acolytes of Brian Wilson, and they do a tremendous job of bringing this album to life. It had not been performed live when the Beach Boys were in their heyday, because the rest of the Beach Boys hated it. They didn't like it, particularly Mike Love, just refused to perform many of these songs because he didn't see it as kind of in the Beach Boys tradition, which it wasn't. It was more melancholy, more orchestral. Some of the lyrics didn't make sense to Mike Love. But Brian always thought of it as his greatest work, and now it's finally getting the treatment that it deserves. The one thing about Brian is he's almost a – Brian's really not a performer anymore. In fact, he kind of looks like he's a deer in the headlights when he gets up there now when he performs. But it's this, it's about this music, and it's about this music that this guy created 50 years ago that still sounds beautiful. So from that standpoint, it's kind of a moving experience. I do recommend seeing it, but it may be a little strange seeing Brian up there on stage.
Is it going to make me sad?
Oh, I hope not. Will it make Wendy sad?
It made me a little sad when I saw it 10 years ago. Brian's, you know, I think his... His travails with drugs and mental illness have been well documented, yeah. And he's sort of come out on the other side very much alive. But you kind of wonder what he's thinking when he's, you know, listening to these songs. There's almost a wistfulness about it, a melancholy, which kind of fits with the music. But Brian's not really a performer anymore. He's not really a great singer anymore. He's kind of more of an observer. Watching his greatest work being performed.
We're talking to Greg Kot, one of our favorite rock and roll writers of all time. You've had a chance to sit down with him at some point, I'm guessing, haven't you, Greg?
Yes, I've talked to Brian several times.
And where is he during those conversations? Is he there or is he elsewhere?
Well, let me tell you, he actually spent some time living in St. Charles in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I spent a whole day at his house watching him work and just hanging around. And there were two or three times where I would be sitting with Brian and he would fall asleep. And, you know, then he would wake up like nothing happened. And there would be times I would ask him, when I started asking him very direct questions, what do you feel like when you wake up in the morning? You know, if you ask him, like, what is the meaning of Pet Sounds? He'll, you know, he'll look at you like, well, I meant it to create a work of love, but he doesn't get very profound. But when you ask him real direct questions about his life, and he would give you these really poignant kind of answers, like, I don't really know where I am. He says, it takes me hours to orient myself each day. I feel scared when I get up in the morning. You know, those kind of things. That's the stuff that really lingers after those conversations. And, you know, they've created a stable life for him. You know, his wife has done a great job of sort of building some stability into his life and allowing him to get some accolades here late in his career. But at the same time, you kind of wonder, you know, Brian seems to be almost like a participant in his life, but not an active part of it, you know?
Didn't his doctor convince him to let him produce or co-produce some of his songs for a while?
Oh, yeah, Eugene Landy. He was like a notable tyrant, one of the bad guys in the music industry, and, you know, kind of manipulated Brian for much of the 80s and into the 90s. And then Brian sort of got his life back when he was able to escape the clutches of this guy. But it was a very negative relationship in his life, and a parasitic relationship, really, and didn't really do him much good. So there was about 20 years there where Brian was pretty checked out.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's still around is amazing to me.
Well, I'm looking so forward to seeing him. I know my 17-year-old son, Michael, really looks up to his songwriting and cannot wait to see him on Saturday night, 7:25. And then Sufjan Stevens, which I'm probably saying wrong, am I?
No, you've got it. That's correct.
Sufjan Stevens. He's at 8:30 on Saturday night. That's one of your picks as well.
Well, he made a great record last year, this Cary and Lowell record, which was, you know, we're talking about some sad topics here. He was talking, this record was all about his mother's mental decline and death, and it's a very sad record. And to me, it'll be fascinating to see how he performs this work in such a large setting. I mean, people are, you know, at a festival, you normally want to go out with a kind of an upbeat feeling, and I'm not sure Sufjan is the guy to do it, but again... It speaks to the fact that Pitchfork is not your typical music festival. It is an alternative kind of music festival, and again, it's for the music connoisseur. I think for people looking to like have a great time and you know, throwing the beach balls around during the music, Pitchfork and Sufjan Stevens are not the ticket for that.
Should I bring my therapist with me on Saturday, Greg?
You might. A little work on Sunday morning after seeing Brian Wilson and Sufjan.
Didn't Lana Del Rey tell Sufjan Stevens to cheer up just a little bit, Greg, at some point?
Oh, that would make the trifecta right there. That would be the trifecta of
sure.
Most, you know, so.
And so Sound Opinions is still going on. Didn't that originate at the Loop radio station?
I did a version of that show in the early 90s, and Jim did another version of that show, and then we sort of joined forces.
Oh, that's right.
99, we did it on another commercial rock station, and then we moved over to public radio in 2005, which is where we've been ever since. We're syndicated on like 130-140 stations now around the country.
Congratulations. So, that's great.
Thank you.
That's awesome. And, of course, you and Jim DeRogatis are doctors, the rock doctors. So musical allergy or addiction or a friend or relative who needs an intervention, how do people find you and Dr. Jim DeRogatis?
Well, we're available on the website for a consultation. there's a small fee available.
Sure.
No, there's no fee involved. I'm just kidding. But we're always glad to help. And we actually do a segment every quarter on the show where we talk to a patient who needs some musical intervention. Like, you know, my wife and I don't agree on music, and you give us some, you know, mutual music that we can all, you know, we can play while we're eating dinner, you know, without throwing plates at each other. So we'll get those kind of questions. And it's always fun. It's just a fun way to include the listeners in the show.
All right. Well, I hope I don't stand out like a sore thumb at Pitchfork.
Don't worry.
And if you guys are going, go to chicagotribune.com and look for Kott's Picks, 19 bands not to miss at Pitchfork, and all the rest. He's Greg Kott. Thank you so much for talking me through this, and maybe I'll run into you there.
Sounds good, Wendy. Thank you very much.
Bye, Greg. Have a Take great care. Week.
Thanks, Bill.
Take
Bye.
Care. All right, a quick break, and then more show. Do you feel better, by the way?
I do.
A little more informed?
I'm a good mom.
I think you are.
Our next guest, I am a big fan of, and I have been reading her columns in the Chicago Tribune ever since the hair incident. Her name is Heidi Stevens. Heidi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Yes, you went viral unintentionally last year because people were criticizing your hairstyle.
I have very controversial hair.
And you don't.
It takes up a lot of room in the studio.
You have lovely hair, and nobody should be criticizing it.
Well, thank you.
And we want a list of names of people who did.
Oh,
we will shame
long.
Them on the air.
It's a long list.
Right. Do you still get criticized for your hair?
I do, and I think that at this point it's from people who have been following the criticism and now sort of want to jump on it.
They're too late.
Yeah. I mean, even when I write about stuff that's fairly serious, a couple weeks ago I wrote a column about whether to keep raising my kids in Chicago.
Yeah.
With, you know, broken schools and, right, increased violence. And one guy wrote, if you leave Chicago, take your hairdresser with you.
That was nice. Like,
so.
Wow.
I don't think she'll go with me wherever I leave because she's happily ensconced in a high rise in the Gold Coast. But that's the kind of thing where I think it's just at this point like a little way to needle me, you know.
It's terrible how women get criticized, you know. It's they either go, you're fat or you're dumb or you have bad hair.
Right. Well, because I think there's still an assumption out there that the worst thing you can be is not attractive to men.
Mm.
That's the ultimate, like, mm-hmm. heartbreaker if you tell a woman that, you know, she's not attractive.
No one wants you.
No one wants you. That's like, well, that'll kill her.
Right.
In, you know, meanwhile, there are 100 things that we care about a little bit more than that. But there is a thinking out there that, like, if I make her feel ugly, that'll really undo her.
That's disappointing.
Isn't
it really is. Yeah.
I mean, what year is it? Don't you have to scratch your head sometime and look at the calendar and figure out it's 2016?
Right.
And you wrote such a good article a while back. I don't know if it was on Father's Day, but you were showing your kids some older movies.
Oh, yeah. That was for Father's Day.
Bill, you would have loved this because it's like showing your kids. What movie was it? Was it Back to the Future?
Well, yeah, we started showing them some 80s movies. So Back to the Future and League of Their Own, which was actually early 90s, but and Big. Mm-hmm. And movies that we remembered, or I remembered anyway. My husband has a little bit stricter definition of good movies because he's a film critic.
Yeah, right.
But I remember them very fondly. And like, they were very sweet, right?
Yeah.
And innocent, almost. And then watching them with my kids, they seemed kind of crass and mean. And one of the things that I was able to, in my mind anyway, chalk that up to was like how different we used to portray dads. Men, but dads specifically, weren't necessarily portrayed as like, you know, sweet, involved people.
Right.
Right? They were like Mr. Mom, where it would be hilarious if they tried to rear their own children.
Bumble everything.
Yeah, that would be like a plot.
It's impossible.
And that has changed so much, and that's the world that my kids know now. That to watch people, like, to watch men and women really not be able to relate to each other at all, and to watch men not really be able to relate to their own children was very, like, head-scratching.
Right.
Like, I don't understand. Why is everyone so mean to each other, they kept saying.
Which is weird, a kid's view of what we thought were pretty sweet
movies.
Pretty
sweet, right? Yeah. I mean, I picked those specifically. It wasn't like they just happened to come on HBO that night. It was like, oh, okay, we're going to go rent Big. We're going to rent League of Their Own.
Yeah.
We're going to rent Back to the Future. You know, Michael went off to, like, Facets or wherever you can find those old movies. Mm-hmm. Because they're not just, you know,
readily
Target
available
or wherever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think the culture has changed a lot when
and
it
that's
comes
good.
To dads. For the best. Yeah.
Not
totally.
Only room mothers now, there are room dads. I
yep.
mean, dads are more hands on.
Yeah. No, that was one of the things I said in the column is I have literally never chaperoned a field trip at my kid's school that there hasn't been a couple dads.
Oh,
with
yeah,
us.
Yeah. It's commonplace,
you know?
Now.
Yeah. Drop off, pick up. Room dad, as you said.
But you know what? Just as though there were movies, and there were plenty of them where a guy's trying to do the lawn or the wash, I mean, or make food, and it's bumble after bumble.
Yeah.
There were plenty of movies also where women were entering the workplace, like
Ooh,
Working
yeah.
Girl, and everyone's like, right. I don't know if a woman could do this.
Yeah.
Is that going to work?
Yeah. What's that Diane Keaton one? She holds the baby like a briefcase.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
And that wasn't that long ago.
Not that long ago. I know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And your most recent column in the Life and Style of the Chicago Tribune, 5 things to do instead of body shaving. Shaming.
Instead of body shaving.
Now that's a good column too, though. Think about it.
Don't shave children.
Some things to do instead of body shaming Kristen Cavallari's kids. Now, there was a picture of Jay Cutler, your favorite person, Bill.
Yes.
On the beach.
Mr. Completion.
Well, he does have, what, 3 kids?
Yes.
So he
yeah.
can finish some things.
At least 3.
Some
right.
things get completed.
Right.
But her kids are thin. And she posted a picture of them. And everybody was, instead of fat shaming, was skinny shaming
right.
her. What
right.
is wrong with people?
Yeah, where do we start? But on this one, so I guess, you know, she has a history of doing some controversial stuff, like not vaccinating her kids, right? And I think she's, I don't know if she's vegan, but she follows some sort of fairly strict diet. So people, I think, took those two things, mm-hmm. looked at that photo, and that one, like, oh my God, she starves her children. And all the comments on her Instagram photo became, you know, why can I see your kids' bones? That's not normal. You're starving them. She went through and deleted them all, left the picture up, but deleted all the comments. So you can't actually go back now and see what people were saying. But she did comment on it. She said, I had, you know, blocked more people today than I've ever blocked in my life, or something to that effect. You know, I it's such a useless exercise, right? And just mean. And I think that, you know, to go around judging other people's bodies when they're adults is one thing. When it's kids, it's like a whole other level of just gross.
And mm-hmm. mean.
And mean.
And like if you see somebody walking down the street and their kid is either underweight or overweight, are you going to like tap them on the shoulder and go, excuse me, but what's wrong with your kid? Are you not? You're not going to do it in person. So why?
Right.
Why would you do that?
And people, I think, forget that kids hear the comments. I mean, maybe her kids are little and they're not on Instagram. I mean, I'm sure that they're not on Instagram, but maybe they're not reading the comments. But I heard from a whole bunch of people who said, I was a skinny kid and I got made fun of all the time. Or my mom would, you know, be asked in front of me all the time, do you feed her?
Mm-hmm.
Does she eat? And like that hurts their feelings. I don't know why. I can't think of an occasion when it would really ever be okay to comment on a kid's body, really in any way. Like, why would you? Other than maybe, you know, you're so strong. That's about the only
something positive.
That's about the only one I can think of. Otherwise, why do you need to tell a kid he or she is skinny or not skinny or big? Or I mean, just like ask them what their favorite movie is right now. Or like, why are we talking to kids about their bodies? Or why are we talking about kids' bodies? It just seems
wrong.
Exactly. So the column was, you know, taking a positive look at it. I can understand people's concern for children, right? So, like, if we're going to be positive about humanity,
yeah.
Let's say people looked at these kids and were legitimately concerned. Like, I wonder if they're getting enough to eat. Because, you know, you can look at someone's kids who aren't yours and still care about their well-being,
oh,
right?
Yeah, sure.
That's humanity.
Right.
So I suggested 5 things that you could do to...
Instead of criticizing, body shaming. Yes.
Right.
Can we do this? Let's do a quick break and then we'll find out what those 5 things are. You can stay.
Perfect.
You're staying. All right. We'll be back. We'll get more information about these 5 things that you can do from Heidi Stevens from the Chicago Tribune. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Bill, all we need is a little tenderness.
That's all we need. That's it.
We're talking to Heidi Stevens, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and 5 things to do instead of body shaming Kristen Cavallari's kids. And yes, her kids looked thin, but they didn't look like, you know, Sally Struthers should be helping them out.
I think they probably have enough resources.
They're doing it.
Yeah, I think they're fine.
Right.
So you had some ideas of what to do instead of criticizing and body shaming other people's children. Why don't you talk to us about those ideas?
Yeah, I think if your heart goes out to, you know, children and you're worried that maybe there are kids out there who don't have enough, it's pretty easy right here in Chicago to find kids who truly don't have enough. Jay Cutler and Kristen Cavallari's kids are probably not among those.
Mm-hmm.
But so I found 5 places that you could devote your energy, right, and your time and even your money if you're so inclined.
Your concern,
and it would be useful and even welcomed, unlike the Instagram posts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Honeycomb Project was one example. It's like this great organization that connects families to volunteer opportunities, because a lot of families want to volunteer as a group, right? But you're like, can I bring my 6-year-old to a soup kitchen? Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Honeycomb Project specifically finds things that whole families can do together. So
very cool.
You can just join their mailing list and they'll send you opportunities. The Crib, the overnight shelter run by the Knight Ministry, a great safe space for homeless youth and a lot of gay and transgender youth maybe who've been kicked out of their own homes, don't know where to go. They can spend the night there. So you can volunteer to serve breakfast there. You can mentor kids there. Greater Chicago Food Depository. They have this cool thing on their website where you can grocery shop right on their website. Like, you don't have to leave your house.
Mm-hmm.
You just go on there. You say, I want to buy jelly. I want to buy applesauce, some pasta sauce. Boom, pay, done.
And that's a better idea, because a lot of times people will whine and say, you know what? I don't have time to go shopping, and then drop it off there. What a great idea.
Totally. I thought so, too. Refugee One, which is actually based right here in Chicago. They are a refugee relocating agency. They're collecting school supplies for refugee kids. So you can, you know, round up some school supplies, drop them off at their headquarters, or you can just donate $25 and they'll fill a backpack with supplies. So I think that's pretty cool. Tutoring Chicago, if you wanted to just go ahead and tutor a kid, they do one-on-one tutoring for kids grades 1 through 6, I think it is. And they're accepting applications now for the fall. So there's 5 things you could do that are all, you know, pretty great
ways
to...
Every one of those are good.
Yeah.
All
and
valid.
You would really positively impact a kid's life, or maybe lots of kids' lives, versus, you know, sitting around and saying that somebody's spine is showing on the beach.
Do you... right.
And it makes me uncomfortable.
Do you think that just by the nature of what we've become in terms of social media, most people think it's perfectly acceptable now to do exactly what you've written about, which is to see a picture of somebody's kids and go, well, there's no rules anymore. I can do whatever I want. If I want to take a shot at that lady or her kids, I can do just that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that's where we are. And I think that it's sad because... It was always sad to do it to famous people to me, because as we just talked about during the break, famous people are people. So,
right.
You know, they're not their characters that they play. They're actual humans with feelings.
Well, you brought up, I don't know if people know the story. We don't have a whole lot of time, but tell a little bit about what Jennifer Aniston has been going through most notably in the press in the last week or two.
Yeah, she wrote a really fantastic essay on Huffington Post Tuesday that basically just called us out on, you know, following along with the tabloid obsession about her pregnancy. Is she pregnant? Is she not pregnant? Did she miscarry? Did she just eat a sandwich? Is she getting married? Is she divorced? Is she heartbroken? She's like this tragic figure.
Yeah.
And she wrote an essay that said basically, like, I'm fed up. I'm not pregnant, but I'm fed up. Yeah. And here's why. And it was really eloquent and powerful. And it was just a reminder that, like, you might live on a hill in Hollywood and have all the money in the world, but you still have feelings and you're still a real person who doesn't want her, you know, uterus speculated about, you know, 8 billion times to Sunday.
Her quote on this, which is just beautiful, and a lot of people have shared it on their Facebook pages, "We are complete with or without a mate, with or without a child. We get to decide for ourselves what is beautiful when it comes to our bodies."
Yep.
Amen, sister.
Amen.
What about people who say that that's part of the trade-off of fame and fortune?
Yeah.
Do you buy into that
at all?
No, I
totally reject that. I totally reject that, actually. I think that, you know, you're going to have to expect that you don't have a lot of privacy.
Yeah.
I think you should be allowed to expect to be treated with some decency, though. I think, you know, expecting that your picture is going to be taken and that people are going to want your autograph. I think that, yes, that comes with the territory. Like, having to accept that, you know, if you show up in a swimsuit, people are going to shoot photos of you and then put red arrows pointing to them and speculating whether that's a baby in there.
Yes, Perez Hilton.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Not even a baby. A baby bump.
Right.
That's the phrase.
I hate that.
That's the phrase that must be used now.
Exactly.
For some reason.
That is gross and I hate
that. Yeah. As though she's not complete, you know, as she said, without a baby bump.
I just think people are so mean, and the only thing I can say to people is if you wouldn't say it to their face, please think twice about terrible texts you send us or, you know, tweets or anything on Facebook. If you wouldn't say it to somebody's face, don't write it.
Right. I agree.
All right. We've solved the one problem for
one
today.
One problem solved.
Yep.
Three more to go.
Our work is done.
Heidi, thank you.
Yes.
I always do great work over at the Chicago Tribune. Greatly appreciated. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Put you in the mood a little bit of a hockey mood, a little.
I cannot wait to, what is it, October 15th is the first game, the 14th.
Doc Emmerich sent me a text while you were gone last week saying...
He missed me?
Saying that he missed you. Doc Emmerich said to tell you that he missed you and that he said, can you believe it? We're just 3 months away from the puck dropping for the opening of the new hockey season.
He did a baseball game a couple weeks ago,
didn't
he?
The Pirates and the Cubs.
Yeah.
We tried to get him on. He you know, he has a very busy schedule, but we were trying our best last week to get him on because he, in all the years he's been doing sports, he has done, as you know, loads and loads and loads of hockey games, and he's the best at it. And I think a little bit of basketball and football, but had never done a baseball game. And then he was doing
a
Cubs.
He had never done one before?
No.
And I think he did it with Costas, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
MLB.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tried my best to see that game, and I couldn't see the game. I missed that game. That's the only one in the series I missed last week. I'm sure he did great. He's Doc Emmerich.
And I love Bob Costas. I really do.
Isn't he good?
He just, you know, I'm not a huge sports fan, like all over the board sports fan.
Yeah.
But his show that he had on.
Later on NBC.
He is so good.
Yeah. He was, when he hosted Later, I think he hosted it for 3 years. His guests were politicians and musicians and stand-up comics. He had Richard Lewis on all the time. And no matter who the guest was,
he was great.
Always good. Yeah,
really
I love
good.
You're going to see a lot of him in the Olympics, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Remember when he had pink eye and could not go on camera?
He had to switch off to Matt Lauer.
Yes.
Yeah, which isn't so bad on the eyes either. But speaking of
his eyes.
He had to wear sunglasses like right away, and then he was absent for like the next week or so.
That's so true, yeah.
What are the odds?
I don't know. Bad timing.
That's why we're in radio.
Right.
We could work
with We've
got
all kinds of afflictions people don't know.
Well, I'm so excited. I was trying to watch a Sox game the other night with my husband, and I said, it's just too slow. It's too slow.
It's strange how the pacing, once you really get into hockey and spend the time, you know, we've been so lucky the last several seasons that the Blackhawks have gone so deep, and you spend so much time watching it, and it is such a fast-paced sport. And baseball's far more leisurely. There's no doubt about it.
You know, it's one thing if you're at the ballpark, you know, if you get bored, you can go get a funnel cake.
Yeah.
Go get a beer.
Yeah.
But just watching it at home, it's really difficult for me to do now because I need my Blackhawks back in action. And when we start thinking about the season that opens in October, it's, of course, the 9th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention that's happening at the Hilton Chicago Hotel. Rowan Anna will be there starting tomorrow at 6, I believe.
Yeah, they're broadcasting live from there tomorrow.
Remember when we got to do that one year?
I do. That was fun. Yeah, well.
It was very fun. Patrick Kane, I just read, is putting his condo at Trump Tower up for sale. You going to get it?
I'll look at it. I'll think about it. I can't afford to live there for 10 minutes.
I can't afford to park there.
I know.
So we were going back and forth, like, you know, we should give this pair of passes to the Blackhawks convention to someone who's a true fan. But I said, on my defense, mm-hmm. I'm a true fan, and I'm a little late to the party, and I don't know a lot of history and a lot of stuff. So there are some fans out there that don't know everything.
Right.
So maybe we should be more random.
And that's what today is. There's some days where we'll make you work a little bit harder for things like this, but today, Wendy, through the mercy of the court, has decided to make this fairly simple, right?
Right. Now, Brian Campbell is coming back to us. He was with us.
Yep.
He's back with us. His number when he played with the Blackhawks was 51?
It was, yes.
Because I'm looking at the roster right now, and they still have him as 51.
I think he was last time, and his hope is to be again. I'm trying to remember last year if there was a Blackhawk that was number 51, and I can't remember.
Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus was 51. You're right.
I don't think there was a 51.
I don't remember if there was or not. I don't think there was last year.
Because I got pretty good, you know, figuring out who was who.
Yeah.
A few new people that was difficult to remember, but
right.
I don't remember a 51. I could be wrong.
We can look. We'll look it up. But Brian Campbell, without a doubt, was number 51 in his last stay with the Blackhawks.
So why don't we, it's going to make Elif work very hard. Our producer, Kevin Richter, is on his little bachelor party weekend.
Mm-hmm. In Sodom and Gomorrah. That's where he is.
Does Southwest fly there?
Yeah, they've got nonstop flights to Sodom.
And
I think six times a day to Gomorrah, yeah.
Is that like Crete and Moni?
Yeah, the All sister right. cities.
So Elif is filling in for Kevin. You have got to clear the lines. We got to just start from scratch here, and it's going to be a lot of work for her. But let's do the 51st caller, 51.
Yeah.
312-981-7200.
What if Dick Butkus wins? Wouldn't that be a weird twist?
I would love it. First of all, I'd
crazy.
Love to talk to him.
Sure.
But we have a pair of tickets. It's the 9th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel. It's happening Friday through Sunday. We have a pair to give to caller 51, 312-981-7200.
Can I quickly say, if you have never had the privilege of being at this convention, it's wall-to-wall thrills and excitement, and the players really are there, and they're hanging out, and they're very accessible, and there's all kinds of things to see and do. It's very interactive. Great stuff to buy if you're a Blackhawks fan. Anything with the Blackhawks logo or the names of your favorite players are there. You can't go wrong. It's just so much fun start to finish.
And I heard Brian Campbell on with Rowan Anna, and he will be there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So let's take a quick break and come back and find out who scored the tickets.
That's
good?
It. Be caller 51 right now, 312-981-7200. It's us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Sarah, Crystal Lake, you and who are you bringing to this convention?
Oh, it'll be a fight between my son and my boyfriend. We'll see who wins.
Oh, this will be great.
How nice has your son been? Has he been? How old is he, first of all?
He's 12. I don't know. He might be a little young for this. So.
Oh, no. I think 12-year-olds would enjoy the Blackhawks convention. I'm not siding with one side or the other, but I think 12 is old enough. He's fine.
Is he a huge Blackhawks fan?
We're all new Blackhawks fans.
Isn't that the greatest?
It is the great, and Wendy, you're part of why. You are so part of why. So thank you so much. Yes,
why was Wendy part of it? What did she do or say?
Because she had some just good dialogue about the team and, you know, taught me some things. Not much, but
well, yeah, I don't.
Not on her.
Not a good teacher.
Not on her. That's on me.
I love you, Sarah. That was so honest and genuine.
She taught us stuff. Not much.
No, but you know what it is? It's fun to be a part of something and to be excited about something. And this Blackhawks team can definitely do that, make you excited. And they're such a great bunch of people, the whole organization.
Yep.
They take care of a lot of charities and do great things. It's just great.
Oh, absolutely. I loved, you know, that bit where they went to the nursing home.
Isn't that fun?
Where Coach Q, yeah, and I work in healthcare. And so all the nurses are always wearing Blackhawks jerseys and... You know, so it's big in healthcare.
Good. Good.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Don't hang up. We will get all your information. And congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Enjoy yourself. Have a good time. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thank you, guys.
Well, that was lucky. That would have been bad if we had to give the prize to somebody else after she won.
Although people are calling thinking there's another pair of tickets, well, which now, we don't have.
No, now that was it. There are no more winners. We have a winner.
As you were saying.
As I was saying. You know when it's Shark Week on television and there's a lot of stories about shark either sightings or attacks, and you say to yourself, well, that's a weird coincidence that it's Shark Week on TV and all of a sudden there's a lot of an upswing in shark attacks.
Do you think this is the shark's way of promoting themselves?
Sometimes I wonder if that couldn't be the way. Well, now there's a movie coming out tomorrow, Ghostbusters. So now all of a sudden there's ghost sightings all over the place, most notably in Kentucky. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is a sad story. Brace yourself, because there's a little jolt of sadness in here. There was a car accident, a fatal accident with a car and a motorcycle in Kentucky, and somebody was passing by and took a picture of the ambulances and of the crash. And in the picture, and I don't know if you've seen this yet.
I did.
You see two ambulances. You see a bunch of squad cars. You see people around doing their jobs, trying to, you know, clean up the accident situation. And then up above the accident scene, you see kind of a grayish white image of what appears to be the shape of a man. It was a man who died in the accident, by the way. And it's just kind of hovering over the crash site.
It just looks like smoke. It doesn't look like it's shaped like a man.
I have to say, that's the I'm far more skeptical than you. I saw this picture immediately and went, well, that's just smoke. That's not a guy floating up above the scene of the accident. But there's all these people. It's been posted all over the internet. It's all over Facebook.
It's worth taking a look at.
Everyone says the same thing. Well, that ghost is just hanging out by the accident, or it's smoke.
You know, it's so weird because there's a Ghostbusters double decker going by right now as we're doing it, which is spooking me right now
because
we're talking about a ghost. I ain't afraid of no ghost. All right, I'm not afraid
anymore.
You're
fine now.
But couldn't it be some kind of steam from the smashed gas tank of the motorcycle? Or
it could also be the shading. It's in a heavily wooded area, and the way the trees are situated, it's a different color from the rest of the branches. Branches aren't traditionally kind of grayish white, but it looks just like a shadow of the way the branches fall or smoke. But it's not a ghost.
Aren't ghosts invisible?
I don't know.
My screen just moved. Did you move it or is
no?
There a
I
ghost
didn't move
in
it.
Here?
There's a ghost in here.
All right, I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
So if we can, we'll Elle, if we can publish this, we can put this on the internet. Yeah. All right.
It's already on the.
Is it on the internet already?
So put it on our Facebook page. You mean?
Yeah, it'll be on the internet and our Facebook page.
We should wrap this up and get out of here.
I know.
Today.
I know. We'll start over tomorrow.
All right.
All right.
Deal.
We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Here's when Bill talks.
You changed. Look at you. Were you inspired by Mary Schmeek's song parodies from last night?
Yes, I was.
I knew it. All right. It's us.
Kill myself.
That
sometimes.
Was fun. No, that was great. It's Bill and Wendy. We know there was some confusion over who won the Blackhawks convention tickets, but Sarah is the winner, and she did something ingenious to ensure that she would win. Please explain.
Well, she had called, and Elif got her information, and somewhere along the line, Sarah from Crystal Lake got disconnected. So she texted us at that same number, 312-981-7200, and said, help, I was just told I won the tickets.
Her name
matched
up.
This is me, Sarah, and she gave her last name.
Yeah.
And it all worked out. So I apologize to anyone else who tried to call. Maybe Ro has tickets to give away, too.
Maybe.
Can't promise that, but maybe he does. But maybe. You're right. You were shocked at Sarah's ability to say, hey.
That was quick thinking. I never would have thought to have texted that in. Very, very smart move.
Remind me, I do not want to be with you in an emergency situation.
You're toast if I'm there. Forget it.
You'll either walk over me or use me as a human shield.
But if it comes to that. I just want to say, since we were just talking about ghosts earlier, the movie Ghostbusters, the new version of Ghostbusters, opens tomorrow. And in honor of this, you and I have a special guest, an actual real-life Ghostbuster, a man whose job it is to go into haunted places and rid them of ghosts.
Because he communicates with them. I'm very interested in this.
Yeah.
I kind of believe in the supernatural. I don't know.
All right. Well, he will tip it in, I'm sure.
I'm sure he will.
For everybody.
I'll still be questioning it.
All right.
Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, are they in the building?
Yeah, they'll be in.
Today?
Yeah, later on today, they'll be in.
Well, we're throwing over the show to them.
Oh. Yeah. Well, they'll be here soon. Here, I can hear them coming now. Yes. Yes, that's it.
Sorry, we like Judy to start on time because I understand she gets a little testy if the news is too late. So I guess you guys weren't ready. Enjoying the brownie from the vending machine?
Yeah.
No, we're ready. Come on.
No, we thought we were taking another break. It was totally miscommunication.
Oh, okay.
Misunderstanding.
Still got the beard. Looking good.
Thank you. I went outside and I hugged a police officer, which I'm told I'm supposed to do now, according to CNN. Hmm.
Although if I was a police officer, wouldn't that be kind of weird if somebody walked up and hugged you? Wouldn't you kind of push them back?
Everybody's doing stories today. Fox, CNN, MSNBC, all doing stories about acts of kindness between members of minority communities and police officers.
Oh.
And I'm like, there's a memo apparently that went out.
Everybody got that memo, right?
Yeah. So it seems a little, I mean, I love the idea of it, right?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? But
sure.
It seems a little staged to me what's happening here. So I went out and did it, and I got a baton to the face.
Oh, my gosh.
It could happen. It depends. The approach matters, I think.
I think it does.
The way you do it.
I think they need to see
that.
You
have to warn them in advance that a hug is coming their way.
Incoming hug, officer.
Hug a friend.
Exactly. I'm about to hug you.
Yep.
My hands are in plain sight.
You have to get permission, though. So you have to say, is it okay that I'm coming in for a hug?
I think that's the etiquette. Right.
Do you have to have a safe word at some point with the police officer?
Stop the hug!
Baton is the safe word.
Yeah. The ringing out of the shot is the safe word for the officer, I think. That point, with me, at least. That's been the butt across the butt of the gun across my forehead.
That's when it's time to stop, right there.
Shove you against the wall. Another sign.
The sound of the handcuffs. Yes. Clinking around my wrists.
Yes.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Coming up.